Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, stay tuned to kptz.org. Our website is more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. You can even sample some earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming of KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some of the earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are the people shopping at the Wednesday Farmers Market down at Haynes Place? It's a much more logical place for an outdoor market, but most folks are used to it being uptown. Just how did they get out the word about the venue change, or did they? I don't know. And now that we're back into the festival season, who are the folks in the audience at the concerts down on the dock? Are they locals or are they tourists? Come to think of it, how do tourists even find out about things like Free Friday at the Fort? Maybe it's a secret just for us locals. Still, there are many types of people who make up this community, and this show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with the people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers, and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is someone who owns two of Port Townsend's most iconic businesses. Scott Rogers owns both Dogs Afoot, our hot dog stand that's a secret guilty pleasure for many a food snob around here, and he also owns Aldrich's Market, a treasured local market since 1895. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So tell me, are you a local boy, born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
Oh, no. Like many of the people that have come to Port Townsend in the last decade or so, I'm a transplant from California by way of Hawaii.
Okay, so where in California?
Grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Where'd you go to high school?
Went to Albany High School. Lived in mostly the East Bay.
Okay. So in high school, people get labeled for being jocks or nerds or whatever, and they don't often agree with what they're labeled as. Do you have any clue what your peers thought you were?
I was most likely that one that strove to fit in everywhere. I was a geek that tried to hide that. Mm-hmm. I was a jock that wasn't very good. Yeah, so I don't know that any of the labels really stuck or fit well.
Huh. You said you were a jock. What sports were you into?
Football.
Football.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a big one in high school.
It is.
At least where I grew up, football players were often the heroes of the campus.
Well, in Albany, unfortunately, Albany was that small school that was really an offshoot of UC Berkeley. So most of the kids were more geek than athlete.
Yeah.
And so we weren't very good.
Okay. Were you one of these rare types that had it in your mind exactly what you wanted to be when you grew up?
No, I still don't.
Yeah, I have the same problem. but graduation looming, what did you decide you were going to do first?
At that time, I was very interested in architecture. I got a partial scholarship to Iowa State University. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I chose that was because I had family in the Midwest, Boone, Iowa, which is just down the highway from Ames, and they had a good architecture school. But that didn't work out for me. I wasn't ready to be that far away from home, and I ended up just packing up my bags and going home and going to work.
How long did you stay there?
Oh, it wasn't long. There was a lot of upheaval at that point in my life that played into that factor.
Okay, so you decided not to go to school there and to return to the Bay Area, and you said you got a job. What sort of job?
I was working with my uncle at a carpet company. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the housing boom in the Central Valley, you know, there are a lot of housing tracks going up. So there was a lot of carpet going in. So I spent about a year cutting carpet and hauling carpet from the Bay Area over the hill to all the housing tracts in Manteca, Stockton.
Well, good skill to have, I must say.
Tough on the knees.
Yeah, I guess it would be. So you said you did that for about a year, mm-hmm. and then what?
I worked for a butcher. I did pharmaceutical deliveries. And then I went to work for a family friend who was a locksmith. And that kind of set as much of a career path as I've ever had at that point.
Huh. I had a locksmith on the show some time back, and some of the things he told me were pretty amazing. Some of it was standard, but I remember one of the anecdotes he talked about was being called multiple times over the years for people who in the evening had gone out to their hot tubs and accidentally locked themselves out of their houses with no clothes.
Oh, yeah, it did not so much that in the Bay Area, not it was mostly, you know, repeat people locking their keys in their car on their way to weddings, and a lot of students locking their keys in their car, locking themselves out of their dorms or out of their houses. Because again, being in Berkeley, there's the whole UC Berkeley life.
But you also got into some sort of corporate security stuff.
In my career in the Bay Area, I started as a locksmith, and then I went to work for a larger locksmith that also had an electronic security division, meaning cameras, card readers, electronic locks, things like that. And I was a project coordinator for them for a number of years, and then they spun off and had a wholesale division, and I was the general manager for that, again, for a number of years, selling security products. And that's when I really came to know the peninsula, if you will, because part of what I did was go out and meet with customers and obviously doing the sales thing up and down the coast.
Can you use an example of a company that you installed a system for and what the different parts were?
Locally, probably I'm trying to think of some of the, most of the high rises downtown I've worked in at one time or another from an installation standpoint. 901 Fifth Ave is a high rise that, you know, we did all of the cameras, all of the card readers. They have a security console that somebody sits behind and they monitor all the floors of the parking structure. They add and delete cards for all the tenants. So the tenants don't have to have keys, and you can regulate when they come and go. You can track when they come and go. And if somebody loses a card, it's much easier and cheaper to replace the card than it is to change all the locks and get keys out to another 1,000 people.
The other night on television, I saw something that I thought was a bit creepy. For going to sporting events, instead of using IDs, they're going to start using facial recognition. Mm-hmm. They will scan you as you come into a football game or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that the way you see things heading?
Oh, absolutely. It's already there. It's used on a daily basis in many aspects of our lives right now. We just don't know it. Where it's being used now in mainstream is get an iPhone 10 to unlock your phone. It uses facial recognition. The previous iPhones used fingerprint recognition. Those types of things are going to be used more and more for ID, simply because magstripe technology is not safe. PIN is not safe. So again, more and more, you're going to need something that is uniquely you.
Wow. Does that raise any privacy concerns?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because once you are in that database, and it's, you know, the same thing we tell each other about, you know, what you put online, once it's out there, then you can be recognized wherever you're at if somebody is sharing that database.
And they get paid to do so, I gather.
Yeah, again, it is what it is. I think we've already gone over the edge of that tipping point where we can actually regulate any of this with any degree of efficiency. The information is out there.
Wow. You obviously at some point transitioned out of being in the security business. How did that happen?
From the company in the Bay Area, I went to work for a national company doing West Coast sales. Mm-hmm. And I just decided it just wasn't for me. I was good at it, but I didn't like the person that I had to be good at it. So I decided to pack up our bags, and we moved to Hawaii and opened a restaurant with my dad in Hilo.
Before we get into that, explain that statement you just made that you didn't like the person that you became when you were doing that job. Explain what you mean by that.
Corporate sales tends to be kind of like a game of liar's dice. They set sales quotas for you, and they're random arbitrary numbers. So they want an increase in business, and therefore your sales quota will always be 10% higher than the previous year. The year that I started with that company was also the beginning of the dot-com boom. So my sales numbers were among the highest in the country. And at the end of that year, when the dot-com was starting to wind down, I tried to warn them that don't expect increases in sales, and it's not going to happen. And it's, well, no, you can do this. You did this once, therefore you can do it again. And so they raised the sales quotas. You do your forecasting in order to stay out of trouble. You forecast high, and then you come up short. And it's a back and forth game instead of just being able to go out and really, you know, I believe if a client understands your product and they have a need for the product in the first place, they'll buy it. So instead of being able to go out and just do your job, there's a lot of time spent in playing this game of liar's dice, of moving numbers around. Another example is when at the end of the year, end of a quarter, when they want to show a bump in numbers, they will discount the heck out of product and push product out, and then not take into consideration that following quarter, all of your clients already have the product and they bought it at a discount. And so, you know, it's that constant ebb and flow, and that portion of it, I love the travel, I love the sales, I just hated the corporate aspect of it.
Well, you know, I've known a lot of salespeople over the years, and the really good ones seem to have an endless ability to take rejection.
For me, it's not rejection. As I said, for me, it was if a client understands the product that I have, and I like to believe that I only represented quality products, mm-hmm. and they understand the product that I have, if they don't buy it, they probably didn't need it. And that's okay with me. Hmm. And I can support them in other ways. And that's just building relationships for the future. If they need the product down the road, I will be the one that they think of. Hmm. And that's the part that I was good at.
Yeah, that's amazing to think of your product, to have enough confidence in your product. Did you ever get in the situation where you were asked to sell something you didn't believe in?
There were products that the company had that I did not believe were quality products. And being autonomous, when you're out in the field by yourself, you get to pick and choose what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so if your numbers are higher for quality products, they're usually not going to bug you about the low numbers in the not so good products.
Well, that makes sense. Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. We're also online at kptz.org. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. We talk about their lives, their hopes, what they think about living here on the edge of the continent. My guest today is Scott Rogers, the owner of our local hot dog stand, Dogs Afoot, also the Uptown Market, Aldrich's. We're just about to talk about his time in Hawaii opening a restaurant, which is quite a jump from selling security systems in the Bay Area in the Western United States. So how was Hawaii? What happened there?
Hawaii was a way to, after being in the Bay Area for a long time and just needing a break, needing a change. My dad had tried to get me to move to Hawaii numerous times, and this was just, it was a good time to do that. So I had an agreement with my wife and daughter that if we didn't like it after a year, we would come back. I loved Hawaii, especially Hilo, Hawaii. Hilo, Hawaii is very much like Port Townsend, very much like Berkeley in the 70s. It's a lot of fun, a lot of diversity.
What sort of restaurant did you have?
It was a very high-end, call it Pan-Pacific cuisine. Mm-hmm. My father was an art dealer, art historian, and so he traveled extensively. He had a gallery in New York, and so in his travels, he would make friends with everybody in the restaurants at every restaurant that he ever went to. He had a friend. So he started acquiring all these different top-end chefs, and he convinced them to move to Hawaii and open, you know, what amounted to be a 5-star restaurant.
That's sort of a career segue for him, being an art historian to a restaurant owner.
It is. And I guess the acorn doesn't roll far from that tree.
Okay, so you had this deal. You'd stay 1 year and see how you liked it. It sounds like you liked it.
Oh, I loved it. The restaurant business, I loved it because when it works well, it's controlled chaos. And that just plays to my strengths. And the way my mind works, it's how to keep all the plates in the air without breaking any.
So why did you come back?
The restaurant was not doing well, and it was not for lack of trying. It was a bad concept, or a great concept, in the wrong place. If it had been on the Kona side, where most of the tourism is, it would have been extremely successful. But the Hilo side, being where most of the people there are, they're hiding out. They're farmers. They're locals. They're expats that are hiding. And, you know, you can't make a living on them. They supported it, but you just can't make a living on them. My wife and daughter didn't enjoy it quite so much. My wife had a hard time finding a job as a respiratory therapist, and my daughter really got a chance to experience what discrimination is all about. Being a blonde-haired, blue-eyed newcomer to Hawaii,
yeah,
it's not easy.
Yeah, and she was a young teenager, I guess, at that stage.
She was very young. She was very young.
Yeah. So did you move back to where you came from?
We did. As I said, that I had the bug. So we bought a restaurant in San Leandro and had a great time.
And so what happened to that restaurant?
For all of your listeners, I can say be very careful when you take on partners. We did not need partners, but they really wanted to be a part of it. They were great friends, and we thought, what could go wrong?
Yeah, I've heard this story before. There are different names, different players, but I've heard this.
Oh, I had heard the story too, but like most people, it's, well, that won't happen to us.
Exactly.
We can do this.
So you parted ways.
We parted ways.
What year was that?
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, well, I won't put you on the spot for that.
I did 2001, 2, something like that.
Okay, so then how did you end up in Port Townsend?
Well, that was by way of Bainbridge, actually.
Bainbridge.
Part of our leaving the Bay Area again, we realized that, you know, we really did enjoy being out of the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as though we were going to look for something to do in the Bay Area again. So we packed our bags and we moved to Bainbridge. And my wife, ex-wife, got a job working for Harrison Hospital right away. And I kicked around for a bit trying to figure out what was I going to do.
Right.
I ended up going to work for an old friend from the Bay Area that had a security company up here. So I spent, about 4 or 5 years doing security installations all over Western Washington. And that's how I got to know a lot of the different high-rises downtown and everything.
So your territory took in Seattle and...
No, it took in everything on the east side. Not a whole lot over here. Did some work for Harrison Hospital and a few places here and there. But there's not a whole lot of need for high-tech security out here at the end of the road.
That's probably true. But how'd you discover Port Townsend?
While I lived on Bainbridge was never really my favorite. And as I said, Port Townsend was a lot more along the lines of what speaks to me, like Hilo, Hawaii, like Berkeley. And so the dogs and I have 2 golden retrievers, and every spare moment I would pack them up and we would head for the Olympics and we would go hiking, and then we would come into Port Townsend and have lunch or dinner and then head home. So I spent a lot of time here. Mm-hmm. And then by hook or by crook, when it came time to move again, this just seemed the natural place for me to be.
Okay. And did you have a job here when you first came?
To Bainbridge or to Port Townsend? No, I did not. It was when our last crisis came, the housing crunch. I pretty much lost everything at that point. I ended up divorced, lost our house, lost my job. So it was a tough period. But then I was still living on Bainbridge, and I met the love of my life, Robin, and she picked me up, put me back together. I lived with her for a while, and then we sold her house, and we moved. That's when we moved to Port Townsend. Mm-hmm. We spent a number of years building our farm out on Discovery. Then we decided we were spending way too much time just on the farm. So we thought we were in town, and we were looking for something, and saw a for sale sign on the hot dog stand. And the rest is history.
So when did you acquire Dogs Afoot?
4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that has been one of the most fun jobs that I've ever had working.
Yeah, well, you certainly have a view of everything that's going on in Port Townsend.
You have different views. There's the physical view of the sound and the mountains and the town and everything else. And then there's the people. You get to see everybody. And to me, that's fascinating. That's one of the most interesting things about it.
I realize that Dogs Afoot is a seasonal business, but having both Dogs Afoot and Aldrich's must be sort of a stretch. Why did you decide to take on Aldrich's?
Because the bane of my existence, what could go wrong?
Yeah.
Why? Our neighbor, and he's a realtor, represented the previous owners of Aldridge's. And Robin and I are always looking for things, just interesting things to do. What little project can we have next? So in talking to our neighbor about various things that we had seen or done, he came to us and he said, Aldridge's is for sale. Why don't you take a look at that? We knew of Aldridge's. But my first reaction was, I'd be bored to tears in a grocery store. And Robin, in her infinite wisdom, she said, well, as you're always telling me, Scott, can't hurt to look.
Mm-hmm.
So we did our due diligence. We came, secret shopped, we hung out, we did all of those things and realized that there's a lot to our Aldrich's.
So what's your vision of Aldrich's?
I would have to say that it's more of a living vision. It'll change. And it really depends on the people in Port Townsend. As much as possible, we want to make it a community store.
Mm-hmm.
So as the community changes, the vision for Aldrich's will change. We want to have variety. We want it to be a space for people to come and be. There's a restaurant. We have storage units. We have grocery. We have meat. We have an amazing deli. Some amazing talent in our deli. We just hired another chef who came up from Northern California, Shannon, and she's amazing. And we've got Brian. There's some amazing talent.
Well, there are many components to Aldrich's, including sushi.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not sure everyone knows about.
A lot of people don't know about it because it's upstairs, which is usually the bane of any retail business, is when you're upstairs in the back, it doesn't do well. And for a long time, it was named Maxwell Bean.
Hmm.
That was always a stumbling block. When people saw the sign from the floor of the grocery, they thought it was coffee.
Well, yeah, that's sort of an assumption you might make. Yeah. What's it called now?
Sushi Ichiba.
Oh, okay. Well, that at least makes it a lot clearer what it is.
Yeah, sushi.
Yeah. So you have the deli, you have sushi, mm-hmm. you have groceries. I mean, but how do you see the store being positioned? Obviously, we have a giant grocery store, Safeway, QFC, and we also have the co-op. So where do you see Aldrich's fitting in?
There's a huge lane between those two, between the food co-op and Safeway and QFC. There are a lot of products and things that we can do that the corporate can't, and the mission of the food co-op prohibits. We don't have the mandates or the corporate regulations that they do. So we can make changes on the fly. We can randomly get up one day and say, today is going to be Taco Friday, and we don't have to take it to management, and we don't have to take it to the board. We don't have to do those things. We can have a salesperson come through and say, hey, look at what we've got. And we can say, hey, that looks like fun. We can get everybody's input at the store. And if people like it, we can say, sure, send us some. So we have that opportunity. When you're regulated as tightly as both ends of that spectrum are, there's a huge lane for us.
Well, you know, when it was up for sale the last time, and even the time before, there were a lot of people in town who were sort of worried about it, mm-hmm. worried about losing Aldrich's. And people view it as part of the town's history.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you make it relevant in the present? And as an owner, ultimately, you have to make a profit. Too.
That's the tough part, walking that fine line and being able to have these products, but not putting yourself in a position where you have to compete with the Safeways and the Costcos and all of the big box. And it goes back to my sales philosophy. I believe if we have a good product and people understand our product, they'll buy it. We don't have to have the volume that Safeway does in order to exist. We just have a lot more flexibility in what we can do. The deli can cook with the products that we bring in, and then people can sample them before they buy them. And we do that all the time.
So, Scott, How would you compare Aldrich's to Central Market and Paulsbo?
I think that if I were to choose a business model that I were going to emulate, it would be something along the lines of a Central Market, Town and Country on Bainbridge. They are a larger version of what Aldrich's is. And in their own way, they are truly what a community store is about. And that's what Aldrich's is.
Is it the people?
It's the people that work there. It's the people that shop there. Having come from Bainbridge, the people that are working in TNC right now are the same people that worked there when I first moved to Bainbridge. They remember my daughter when she was very young. They remember Robin when she first moved to Bainbridge. They remember when, you know, her daughter was extremely young. They're still there, and the same people still shop there. They still remember you. You still have relationships with them. That's what we want for Aldrich's. We want Aldrich's to be a part of the fabric that's Port Townsend.
I also feel that at a Central Market, you can ask for things and they will listen to you. Well, I couldn't get that sort of thing at a Safeway or something like that. Is that the kind of thing that Aldrich's would be able to do?
Absolutely. It's something we have to weigh because oftentimes the purchasing that we do is in bulk.
Right.
And it may be difficult to bring in a case of something when we don't have the foot traffic that a Central Market might.
Right.
But absolutely, we have a suggestion box and we go through that every other day.
That's interesting. And have you acted on some of the suggestions in the suggestion box?
Absolutely.
Can you give an example of just one of them?
A lot of whole milk products. When we bought the store, our dairy was fairly limited. And if you go to our dairy section now, just through the suggestions that we've gotten through the suggestion box, we have a minimum 25 different dairy products that we've added to our dairy offering.
Interesting. Well, I hope that Aldrich's will continue for another 105 years or whatever the actual history is.
not with us at the helm.
So if someone asks you to just sort of succinctly describe Aldrich's, what would you call it?
Uniquely Port Townsend.
Uniquely Port Townsend. Well, I think that's probably true.
It is.
Well, so are you going to continue running both of these establishments?
Oh, my goodness, no. We've had Dogs of Foot for sale for a year now, and that's been a challenge unto itself. But there's just not enough time to do both as well as we want to.
Yeah.
This is something that I need Robin at my side to do well. We do everything together. It's tough being separated like this.
How many employees do you have altogether between the two establishments at this point?
Oh, between the two? 32?
Well, that's a considerable number of jobs for this community.
It is. Well, it is. And that's what it's here for.
Okay, well, you know, both of these are iconic institutions, and I certainly hope personally that both can continue to succeed. And I'm happy you bought both of them and hope it continues well. Thank you so much for being on the show, Scott. You've been listening to KPTZ, Our Town. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who make up this community. My guest today, Scott Rogers, the owner of two of Port Townsend's most famous, iconic businesses, famous within the context of Port Townsend, of course, Dogs of Foot and Aldrich's. Thanks again. I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the man in the glass booth. He edits the show. He makes sure that me and my guests sound much better than we really are. We sound professional, calm, and clear. And I also want to thank Larry Stein, program director, Kate Ingram, station manager, and Robert Ambrose, chair of the board. All work long hours and are devoted to making KPTZ the best community radio station possible. We are totally listener supported, so anytime you want to support us by donations or volunteering, you are welcome. Thank you so much for listening to Our Town. Keep tuned to KPTZ Port Townsend for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.